on 1116 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. It is the Ultimate Wrap here on 1116 SEN, where we wrap up everything that's happened in the world of sport in the last 24 hours or so. And to help me do that today, say very good morning to my mate, Troy Zantuck. Zanners.
Very good morning to you, Shebex. To all the mothers out there, have a great day. It's a day where you've got to spoil the mum. The fragrance counter would have been doing a roaring trade. The florist
with that
all
new
around
Delta
Melbourne.
Delta fragrance. Have you seen them? They've been pumping that.
They've been pumping Delta, have they? Sheesh. The Delta fragrance.
Yes.
Yeah. If you don't mind, umpire.
Yes.
It's been a great week, hasn't it, in sport? And round eight. Boil over round.
Yeah, it is a boil over round. We'll speak to Brett Anderson in just one tick from SEN's Inside. Well, not as much of a boil over round as round seven was. Where I think the majority of us tipped one, maybe two, possibly three winners. Some people tipped five, and we'll hear Brett Anderson tell us that in just a tick, I'm sure. Josh Masood to join us to talk about NRL.
To that. Yep, yeah, of course. The Stormer. Wow.
Yeah, well, they went down
what
to
an
the
incredible
Gold Coast
game
Titans.
That was.
They did. Daniel Garb to talk to us about the last couple of weeks of the EPL season. That is coming into an absolute classic finish. Even though Chelsea have wrapped up the title, who stays and who goes is a big thing at the moment. We'll also talk tennis with Mark Sofoulis as well, and Larry Canning to join us to talk about the Players' Championship in golf. All that to come in an hour. How are we going to do it? Well, we're going to get straight into it, and we do that by chatting with Brett Anderson from SEN's Inside Football. Good morning, Brett.
Hey, boys. Good to be with you on this Mother's Day. I've been up trying to cook some breakfast for my wife, and the kids are trying to burn the house down, so it's very exciting.
So it's just a normal day in the Anderson household.
I get worried about you saying trying to cook some breakfast. You're not much of a cook?
No, horrendous, Shebex. Absolutely horrendous. So very lucky to have a wife who's a fantastic cook, and up at the moment trying to cook some toast, which I'm probably making a mess of.
Oh, we'll let you get back to that in just one tick. Sorry, Mr. Sanderson, hang in there. We'll let him do his job in just one sec. Mate, it's been an interesting weekend of football, not as surprising as last week. I think, did I hear you say you tipped five last week?
Yeah, I got five. Mum got six, so I was a bit flat. I got pipped in the family tipping comp. I thought I might have gained a few tips, but she actually gained one on me and went further ahead, so bit disappointing in that respect. But yeah, it was a tough week last week, and it was probably all going to plan this week until last night, wasn't it?
Yes.
Things got flipped on its head.
Exactly. I tipped Essendon, so I wasn't too upset about that one. But
interesting.
I haven't been impressed with Geelong lately.
No, they've just been tracking along, and their last 2 weeks had been poor. But now three in a row, they've got some issues, the Cats, and it all comes down to the fact that when you shut down their two megastars in midfield or you limit their impact, the rest of the players aren't stepping up, and their defensive pressure last night was atrocious. 15 tackles in a half a footy, not good enough.
Shocking. Yeah, they were ambushed in the first quarter by the Bombers. They played some scintillating football, and tell you what, Zach Merritt, another Crichton medal in the offing for him. He was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, I reckon there's a bloke playing at centre-half back who'd be pushing him just as hard in Michael Hurley there, Zanna.
Yes.
Zach Merritt, his tackling pressure last night was immense. I think I saw a stat halfway through the game where he had 10 or 12 tackles. He wasn't probably getting as much of the footy at that stage as what he had. But then he obviously improved after half-time. But his tackling pressure was outstanding. And as I mentioned, Michael Hurley's, since Anzac Day, his form's gotten better and better, and he's in outstanding touch. But, yeah, they've got some problems, the Cats, when you look at it. It's funny when you look at the Bombers, though, guys. They seem like they're able to rouse themselves for a performance every couple of weeks. And we know Anzac Day and round one, they had that big win. But there have been some real letdowns in between. We saw the loss to Melbourne. We saw the trip over to Fremantle last week. It's almost like just when they've had that much time out, those players that... it's taking a little bit to get back into that consistent week-by-week performance, and they're able to get up and have a big effort like last night. And look, they were well and truly good value for their win against the Cats last night, and it's a great result for them. But as I said, Geelong got some issues.
The Joe Danaher highlight reel continues to roll on. His goals
every second week
were absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, he's an interesting player when you look at it. He must frustrate Essendon fans some weeks when he kicked 0.65 against Melbourne a couple of weeks ago. And probably in some ways it crueled any momentum that they had. They needed to be five or six goals in front in that game to be able to hang on, knowing how they had been fading out in last quarters. And last night they faded out again. And there were probably some some nervous moments there late in the game when the Cats closed till firstly it was 16 points, and then it got to 11 points with 2 minutes to go. It's probably Geelong had to do everything right, but Danaher's form is one of the big reasons. When he plays well and he has days like that, Essendon are consistently winning games. So if he can produce that more often than not, well, the Bombers are going to be well placed.
No doubt about that, and a good win to them by 17 points. Good win to Melbourne also last night. Your boys getting up by 41 points over Adelaide. It was a seesawing game for the first half. Melbourne in front at quarter time, Adelaide in front at half time, and probably looked the better team towards that halftime siren. You maybe felt that they had the ability to run away with it, but Melbourne just stuck in there, and then that final quarter from the Demons. She was Cam Pedersen. How fortunate are Melbourne that a couple of injuries has given him the opportunity to actually jump up and shine?
Can't remember too many better wins from the Melbourne Footy Club in the last 20 years than that one last night. To be 28
and you take that on, we take that on board in the fact that you're a staunch Melbourne supporter.
Aww. Yeah. Yeah, 28 points down against the top of the ladder team in Adelaide, who've been running amok over everyone bar the North Melbourne last week. So coming off a loss and to be nearly five goals down and then to win by 40 points going away and looking like they were going to go further and further if the game extended was just one of the better wins, and especially with a man down with Jaden Hunt knocking himself silly there just before halftime, I think it was. Or it might have been the third quarter. When he ran in to tackle Sam Jacobs and knocked himself out. So they were a man down, a key player down as well. And without, obviously, Max Gawn, who's still on the injury list and will be for a while, but Jesse Hogan out ill as well. So you're probably looking at their two best players not playing. To record that win was sensational. Cam Pedersen, you mentioned. Look, I've been a pretty staunch Cam Pedersen fan for quite a while. I've always thought that he needs to be in the team. And Melbourne's win-loss record when he is in the team and the structure is so much better than when he's not. And it was good to have him obviously play another strong role last night. Whilst they got smashed in hit-outs by Sam Jacobs, they belted the Crows around the footy. They were more hungry. They were harder. They played with more intensity and more movement. The Crows were flat-footed, and they didn't know what to do. And Rory Sloane had no impact again, tagged out of the game by Bernie Vince. So teams have now got a blueprint. That's 2 weeks in a row that basically Melbourne and North Melbourne have done the same thing, and the Crows haven't been able to stand up to it. So Don Pike's got some real challenges ahead in terms of what he's able to do to reorchestrate that midfield, especially where they've been flogged two consecutive weeks. And they've got some problems. It's funny, just 2 weeks ago there was some talk around, oh, when are they going to lose their first game? Well, they're losing games now, and you look at their percentage, it's back down to 127 from where it was at 160, I think, 2 weeks ago. They've come back to earth with a big thud, so it's going to be interesting to see how they respond next week. But love seeing Dean Kent back in that Melbourne side too, guys. He had some power and nous in the front half, so good to see him back in the senior team.
Speaking of power and nous, Christian Petrarca, he is a game changer, and wow, a lot to look forward to for D's fans there, Brett, but also impressed with the form of gun recruit Michael Hibbard with 34 possessions.
He's probably been the best of those Essendon players who missed the 12 months. When you look at it, his form since he's come back in has been outstanding. And again, last night, he was the one who really steadied the ship in the first half. I think he had 21 touches in the first half and really kept Melbourne in the game. Did a fantastic job on Tom Lynch at times too. So he was a really strong contributor overall. But you mentioned Petrarca, yeah. And the game changed when he went into the centre bounces. They went into the middle, and just his ability to extract the ball and keep his feet. So he'd stay on his feet when the ball was in the contest and the Adelaide players would be on the ground. He'd just pluck it out and charge forward. And just thought that it was a bit of a coming of age. He's kicked goals this year. I think he's kicked 12 or 13 goals now, and he's been a really good player in the front half. But going into the midfield last night, we saw, I think, you know, I tweeted this last night, just it was the tip of the iceberg for what he can bring to the table at AFL level. He was outstanding.
If anyone's questioned why clubs pick up players with a year or two left in their career, it's all based around experience. And if you saw what Stevie Johnson did last night to Collingwood in that last 50 seconds and his ability to get to the bottom of the pack, read the play, kick the goal and kill Collingwood, that's why they do it.
Yeah, I was actually down. We had an interleague game yesterday and we were having a few drinks last night after the game, a bit of food down there, and there was a lot of Collingwood supporters floating around. I've never heard such a sigh when Stevie Johnson ran onto that ball in the goal square and jammed through the winner, because for long periods in that game we're watching there, they looked the better side, Collingwood.
Yeah,
they were great value for their lead. You've got a feel for Nathan Buckley in some ways, because you probably saw that at the final siren with his reaction, and And when Johnson kicked that goal, just how deflating it looked for him, because they put so much work into it. When you consider they went up there without Adam Treloar, there was a question mark over Scott Pendlebury, obviously with the pending birth of his child, and he got through. There was probably a few little scary moments there when he ran down the race to go to the toilet where people thought that he was running off the ground. But look, the Pies are dead stiff. They did everything right. You go up there against a team who they actually hadn't lost to. So that was their first loss to GWS. But they had a really good record against the Giants. And you got a feel for them, though. But you know what? In some ways, you can take a positive out of that and think, you know what? Our best footy is good enough against what many people consider to be the premiership favourites. So whilst you don't get the W and supporters sort of feel bad about it, I thought they did a lot right yesterday. And they should be really happy with the way they perform. The key is now to bring it back and bring it into action next week.
And Jeremy Cameron, another 6 goals. He kept them in the game in the first half. Make no mistake about it, Brett. And again, Josh Kelly just stepping up to the plate once again with 36 possessions.
Yeah, well, their best players stood up when they really needed it. And I think that was the key for GWS. When they found themselves in a real hole early, what was it, 4 or 5 goals down?
Yeah.
It was Jezza who brought them back into the contest and... 6 goals. He's having a really good year when you look at it. I think he's flown under the radar a little bit. Like I remember a couple of years ago when he was the talk of the town and was speaking that he was going to be the star key forward of the competition. He's probably had a couple of years that whilst he's kicked goals, he hasn't had massive impacts on games. He's only been getting 7, 8, 9 touches, where this year he's getting a little bit more of the footy. But geez, he's kicking goals in bunches. Another 6 last night, and he's really putting pressure on Josh Kennedy at the top of that Coleman medal chart.
Yes, 28, Cameron at the moment, Josh Kennedy 27, Hawkins on 26, and Eddie Betts on 25. So it's a compacted Coleman medal.
It, absolutely it is, and I think that's a good thing too, and we're seeing different types there. If you have a look at it, they're all different types. So Tom Hawkins is more of that stay-at-home, out-of-the-goal-square full forward, the old-style full forward, as we'd probably like to call it. You've got Eddie Betts, the small forward. Jeremy Cameron's your modern-day type of key forward. And then Josh Kennedy's sort of an in-between hybrid between Hawkins and Cameron. So it's always good to see different types up there, and especially see the small forward up there. Whilst Eddie didn't have a great night last night, he was well helped by Nev Jetta. He's one who we always love watching because he does some unbelievable things.
No real surprise down in Launceston. Hawthorn taking the chocolates against Brisbane. So Kilda Carlton was a good game.
Jack Billings, welcome to the AFL. 5 goals, 30 possessions, 5 out of 12. Carlton, very competitive again, very well structured behind the footy. It's what we're coming to expect from this Carlton side. Yet they had a couple of, I guess, lapses early in the year where they were blown out. And the Port Adelaide game, I think we need to just write off totally because of the young team they took over there. And Port, when they get their tails up, can do that to anyone. But when you look at the rest of the scores, they're defending really, really well. And I think some people would have pointed to some games at the MCG where the weather was probably a bit unkind. So that sort of contributes to it. But yesterday, on a fast deck against a team who likes to move the ball really quickly in St Kilda, who's been playing some great footy, they held them to, what was it, nearly 80-odd points. So a really strong defensive effort. Again, the challenge just for Carlton is going to be kicking goals. And they're the lowest scoring team in the competition. And again, they struggled to get goals yesterday. And as I mentioned, Billings with 5 was really the difference. Not too many days you'll get a midfielder having 30 possessions and kicking 5 goals. And it was the real difference in the game. But I think the Blues can be quite happy with that performance again. And supporters must be loving the way that they're going to the footy. You know what you're going to get from Carlton when you go. You're going to get immense effort. You're going to get really well defended, really good defensive structures. And you're going to be in the game for a long, long time. So I think they're on the right track.
No doubt about it. Of course, some big games today. Richmond Fremantle at the MCG. And the theme song, I've been told, for the Port Adelaide and Gold Coast match when they come out in China could be this.
Oh, it's a lonesome away from your kindred and all by the campfire at night.
There will be no beer sold at Shanghai for this game, which means it'll be the pub with no beer. Apparently, only corporates are going to be able to drink beer. General admission won't be.
It'll be like going to watch the amateurs on a weekend.
It will be, you're right.
And the other one could have been Darude Sandstorm. That could have been the song that was played on the way out. But it seems like the weather's going to be okay over there for it today. And part of me really looking forward to seeing how it goes and how it comes up as a spectacle, because the AFL's put a lot of work into it, as has Port Adelaide. And hopefully they get a decent result on it. Hopefully we see a great game. And and plenty of people in the crowd. And I think we need to build the game in some ways. At times, I think that we probably look a little bit too further abroad in terms of building the game than what we need to. And there's probably areas of grassroots footy, whether it's in country Victoria or even Tasmania especially, that I think probably needs a bit more helping along. But you can understand it in some ways in terms of trying to get the maximum dollar out of it and trying to bring more and more people to our game, because I think we're only going to benefit if that is the case.
It'll be interesting to see, Brett, who kicks to the Great Wall end of the ground.
Yes, the Great Wall. Is there a North Korea end too? I don't know. There's going to be an interesting one in Shanghai. But there's been a lot of conjecture around the game, hasn't there? First, we had the situation with North Korea and China, yeah, and all that, and then we had the sandstorms or the possible dust storms going on, and then you've got the smog that people have spoken about, and then the air quality, and then you've got the travel. But a lot of negativity around this game.
I really
hope that there's going to be a cracking game of footy between two teams who I think have played some really good footy this year. Probably got a little bit more trust in Port this week. I didn't have trust in them last week, but I think they'll bounce back today and get a win over Gold Coast, especially with a couple of players missing for the Suns.
The only thing that I reckon the AFL have got wrong in this is that they're scheduled 2 weeks before the bye rounds. I think it would have been better to have these guys
into
go over there and into a bye, and then, yeah, they could have spent an extra day or two over there promoting the game,
yeah,
and then come back, had the week, you know, the few days off, and then, yeah, got ready for the next week. That would have been the only thing I'd probably change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a learning thing for next year or if future years, if they look to take games abroad, that potentially you do use it either the week before or the week after a bye. But, yeah, I guess we all live and learn, and something that the AFL can take out of this potentially moving forward.
Yeah, good on you, mate. Thanks for joining us, as always. Do it again next week.
No worries, guys, and happy Mother's Day to all the mums out there.
Good on you, Brett.
A cracking day.
It certainly will be. Thanks, Brett. Brett Anderson joining us, Essendon in Inside Football. That new... The May edition is out there now in the
stands.
Does a
great job, Brett Anderson, doesn't he?
Fantastic job.
He's one of the best in the business.
He is.
He knows his stuff.
Joining with us here on the Ultimate Wrap, 24 past nine. We'll take a break. We are talking NRL next.
On 11:16 SEN, the Ultimate Wrap with Tony Shebeki.
28 minutes past nine, and before we go any further, I should say congratulations to the AFL, who have got it right and scheduled a bye for both Port Adelaide and the Gold Coast next week. They are the only two teams, I believe, Troy, that have the bye next week.
They certainly are, Shebex.
So well done.
And you were alerted to the fact.
The AFL,
yes.
They listened to me and they made the amendment very quickly.
Yes, and the SMSs were right onto it, Shebex. So,
good to see everyone's awake.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much as well. Australian Test Vice Captain David Warner's unbeaten 69 has set up an 8-wicket win for the Sunrisers Hyderabad in the Indian Premier League, and with it has also boosted their hopes of a top to finish. James Faulkner fared a little better than Aaron Finch on the day, also making 8 before falling to Mohammed Siraj. Moses Henriques also made 12 runs over there in the IPL. Mitchell Johnson, a couple of wickets for him. So not a bad day for the Aussies over in the IPL. Not a good day for the Melbourne Storm, though. Looked like they might have had it all wrapped up until the Gold Coast Titans thought they'd score a couple of late tries in that match and beat the Melbourne Storm. The final score there, 38-36. And to tell us more about that and other NRL stories, Josh Mashood from Channel 7's NRL coverage joins us. G'day, Josh.
Hey, boys, I'm in shock.
Oh, aren't we all?
I just cannot believe a Melbourne Storm team could score 36 points and lose a game of football. Some very uncharacteristic performances by them this year, isn't it?
No doubt. And I think the sign was there. They were only 2 points up at half time, weren't they?
I think it was level at half time.
Okay.
Maybe. It was 18 all.
Yep.
And both halves were very similar. They started slowly, got to a decisive lead, and you would have thought Melbourne would have just gone on with it and won quite easily. They dropped their guard at the back end of both halves, really. Up 36-28 with 7 minutes to play, you just don't see Melbourne lose from there. But they found a way to lose, and this is the opposite of the team we've become used to. They seem to always find a way to win. So it was a really bizarre performance, and Craig Bellamy, rightly so, absolutely seething afterwards. He said it was the worst defensive effort in his time at the club.
The win was made more incredible, Josh, but with the Titans, they were down on their bench. They were injury-stricken.
That's right, yeah. At the end, they were down to just one fit man. And one of those men they were missing was Jarryd Hayne as well. He went off with a knee injury too. So Gold Coast, they're a gutsy team. They often can pull off these miracle wins. But I don't know if the Jesse Bromwich saga was playing on Melbourne's mind a little bit. I think there might have been a bit of a hangover as well in that poor defensive effort in the last 20 minutes against the Dragons where they leaked four tries. They didn't pay a penalty for that on the scoreboard or on the competition ladder, and often when you don't, then it can be worse next time around.
It's one that they'll be ruining the Melbourne Storm because they've always come into this period of time, and that'll happen in the next few weeks now during State of Origin period, where it's been very tough for the Storm to get wins because they do lose so many of their good players to State of Origin. A win here would have given them a nice little buffer at the top of the ladder and may have held them there at the end of the State of Origin series.
I can't add any more to that. That is a great point. It's so many years they go in well on top of the ladder. They're still on top of the ladder. They will be at the end of the round. But, yeah, no doubt, it's 2 points they've thrown away. And to get it back, they're going to have to win with basically a reserve-grade team somehow during that Origin period.
The double headers, Josh, a stroke of marketing genius at the Suncorp Stadium.
Yeah, it's been going on for, this is the second year that they've had them, and they've had them on a Friday night about 5-6 years ago. With these things in rugby league, what tends to happen, the first year, it's huge, it's a full house. The second year, it starts dwindling 10%, 10%, 10%. So they've got to find a way of reinvigorating it. But 44,000, a very, very healthy crowd and a great night of football. Whether or not you could do them still in Sydney, they had them here about, 15, 16 years ago. The Olympic Stadium actually opened with a doubleheader and got 110,000 people, which is just ridiculous for rugby league. But, I think they've got to think of new and novel ways to get crowds, not just to rugby league guys, but to all life sport, because we're not competing against other codes anymore. I see the competition as technology, as phones and all the other pursuits that you can do on the weekend. So they've got to find different ways.
I wonder whether they could ever actually look at doing a Melbourne Storm and a Melbourne Rebels game doubleheader at Amy Park. I know they're two separate codes, but wouldn't it be great if the two codes could get together and actually promote rugby per se? I know they're two different sports, again, league and union, but just to try and get a big crowd into Amy Park to see those two teams would be great.
Yeah, the one thing that would spring to mind as a difficulty would be like the sponsorship stuff.
Yeah,
you'd probably have to rely on those LED screens a lot, and also if they've got different porridge rights with their alcohol and all sorts of things.
Well, even the TV rights would be different too.
That's right. Well, yeah. That might be okay with some. It's both. If it was a Fox only broadcast, it might be all right. But having it on a particular channel, and then different staff going in and out of the commentary box. But look, it's good thinking. But look, as is, you look at Melbourne Storm's crowd at Amy Park this year, and they've been very, good. Very healthy, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. They have.
So they don't need to boost it too much. The last game against the Warriors was just about a sellout.
The other game there at Suncorp was that game between Brisbane and Manly, which was a cracker of a game as well. Brisbane getting up 24-14 in the end and consolidating a spot now in the top three.
Yeah, and a weird one. Like Manly scored three tries in the opening 8 minutes and were up 14-0, and they held that lead for about 40 minutes and then just got worn down towards the end of the game. But the big turning point was them losing their fullback, Tom Trbojevic, who was a lock for the wing to make his Origin debut for New South Wales in a few weeks' time. He's gone off with an ankle injury. They've fallen apart completely. And then even worse news, Trent Barrett comes out afterwards and says he might be out for the season. That's a huge blow for both New South Wales and Manly if that is the case. But he has had ankle problems in the past. He had surgery on both of them over the off-season. So our thoughts with Tom Trbojevic. Let's hope it's somehow going to be okay for him.
And a tremendous performance also, Josh, with Penrith overcoming the Warriors, a 22-point deficit, and getting up at Pepper Stadium 36-28.
Yeah, it felt like we were watching touch football yesterday. All these games were a bit airy-fairy, weren't they? It was just, there wasn't much emphasis on putting your body in front of other bodies and defending the New Zealand Warriors. Fair dinkum. How could you be a Warriors fan and not be in the cardiac unit every weekend? 28-6 they were leading at halftime, and they not only surrendered the match, they surrendered that lead by the 54th minute mark. So in 14 minutes, Penrith scored four tries and looked like they were going to go on and win it by 20 or 30 at that point. And then it became a bit of an arm wrestle. Penrith got the match winner with three to go. I'm worried about Kieran Foran, guys, for the Warriors. He just does not look free at all with his back and hamstring. Penrith's final try, he was running on the spot like some sort of Elmer Fudd cartoon. And it just looks like he's not the player. He's not stretching out like he can. His running game isn't what it is. And Canterbury might have a bit of a job ahead of them, the physio department, to get him right next year.
Josh, great to have you on board as always. Thanks for joining us today, mate. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Josh Massu joining us here. Other schools in the NRL over the weekend: North Queensland 30, Canterbury 14. Cronulla defeating St George 18-14. South Sydney also winning their game 28-8 against the West Tigers. We'll take a break when we come back, talking some soccer with Daniel Garb. Also still to come, tennis and a bit of golf as well.
11:16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
21 minutes to 10 o'clock. Rugby Union, the Blues 50 defeating the Cheetahs 32. The Lions 13 defeating the Brumbies 6. The Crusaders 20 defeating the Hurricanes 12. And the Queensland Reds 29 defeating the Rebels 24 at Amy Park. A good effort by the Rebels, but unfortunately for them, not good enough. The Brumbies still leading the Australian Conference. The Rebels down on the bottom. What are you doing for breakfast this morning, Troy?
Off to Dundas and Fawcett, where the stars aligned for fabulous food and wine, Shebex. Some of the best breakfasts in town. The absolute signature dish is the ricotta hotcakes. The French toast, magnificent. The five grains porridge, which I know you're a big fan of.
Very much.
And I tell you what, the Eggs Benedict isn't too bad either. So if you're thinking of heading down for Mother's Day for a nice brunch, lunch or late afternoon get-together, Dundas and Fawcett, 111 Dundas Place.
EPL update, Daniel Garb from Fox Sports joins us. And Daniel, Manchester City have enjoyed pretty much a huge let-off in their quest for the top four finish in the Premier League. Arsenal edged to within 1 point of fourth place Liverpool with an impressive victory, and Chelsea wraps up the title. It's been a big week.
It has been, yeah. I mean, headlined by Chelsea winning the title, of course, Shebex, hello to you. And I mean, they were pretty much in complete control all season long, only lost five games for the season. They started off a bit slowly. Once they got into their groove, though, they never looked back from that. A couple little hiccups here and there, and Spurs made them work for it, you know, for a large part of the run-in, but it was always going to be theirs to lose. And yeah, they won their last couple of games. Once Tottenham made a mess of it against West Ham, a fifth Premier League title was Chelsea's in Antonio Conte's first season. So an amazing effort from the Italian. They didn't have European football, so the schedule was pretty clear week to week. They made the most of that. He changed their tactics, and he got some of his best players back to their absolute best. So a very impressive campaign by him, and Chelsea lift the trophy once more for a fifth time in the Premier League era. So a huge effort. And now it goes to the top four race, of course, because Arsenal had a big win overnight, which means Liverpool needs to beat West Ham tonight. That is massive for Liverpool's Champions League hopes. If they slip up, if they draw or lose, Arsenal are back in the box seat for a top four spot. And the Reds, after being in the top four for nearly all season, could miss out on a Champions League spot. So tonight is enormous.
Daniel, just on Conte's performance, he becomes the fourth manager after Jose Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti and Manuel Pellegrini to win the Premier League in their first season. So it's an enormous performance, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, especially this season, because there was so much hype about the new managers coming in. I mean, everyone expected a huge impact from Pep Guardiola, certainly from Jose Mourinho taking over at Manchester United, from Jurgen Klopp, who only had 6 months with Liverpool, really, last season. So there was so much hype about the managers. And because Chelsea finished sort of mid-table last year, we thought they'd improve under Conte, but no one thought they'd go from 10th to first straight away. So for him to basically take the cake out of all those managers, steal the march on them and win the title ahead of all of them is a huge effort, yeah. And Italians have had a pretty good record in the Premier League as well, Italian managers. You look at Claudio Ranieri, of course, and Carlo Ancelotti, who you mentioned. Antonio Conte follows in their footsteps. So, yeah, he certainly led the way out of all of them in a year where we expected so much from the managers.
Swansea have moved to within sight of probably Premier League survival after a 2-0 win over Sunderland.
Yeah, they had a big win overnight as well. So they're in a good position now. They need Hull to either lose or draw against Crystal Palace when they play tonight. That's the early game. If Hull win that, then it might just be back on the race to avoid being that final team to drop into the Championship next season. But a big win by Swansea. They took advantage of a paltry Sunderland side who have been pathetic all season, relegated weeks ago. David Moyes has just had an absolute shocker over there, and they provided no fight whatsoever, really, for the majority of the game last night. So a big win for Swansea. They've been pretty good of late, but now they need Crystal Palace to get the job done against Hull, and they're pretty much safe if that's the case. But if Hull get a win, it'll go down to the final week.
And I'd like goal to Joshua King help Bournemouth pretty much secure a spot in the top half of the Premier League, which is a great effort by them.
Yeah, it really is. They've had a really good season. They've got a very, very encouraging and enterprising manager in Eddie Howe, who has a massive future ahead of him. I think he'll get a bigger job sometime soon. Don't want to wish the worst for Bournemouth fans, but I'm sure they are fearing that anyway. But yeah, with the squad at their disposal, they play some really good football. They're a tiny club, and they're in the Premier League, and they have been for a few seasons now, which is a lot about their manager, Eddie Howe. And yeah, to finish top half of the table, that club, along with a club like Burnley, really small club, to survive again. You know, both of them have got young managers who are really on the way up. Sean Dyche in Burnley's point of view. So, yeah, a very good season by Bournemouth. For them, I mean, finishing top half of the table, it's like winning the league for them. It's beyond their wildest dreams as well.
And closer to home, Daniel, our Melbourne Victory captain Cal Valeri winning last night's victory medal and rounding it out, polled 62 votes, James Truisi 55, and Marco Rojas 37. So a great year for Cal Valeri.
Yeah, it really is, because Rojas and Truisi were probably the favourites going into last night's medal count. The two attacking midfielders who were really impressive all season long. And it's great that Carl's one of them. And he's been a wonderful servant for the club now for a number of years, a really good leader. And for him, it would be, you know, a nice way to finish the season off, of course, after he was one of the players that missed a penalty against Sydney FC. Players can miss penalties all the time. I mean, it doesn't have any sort of impact on what quality of footballer you are. And if that was his final memory of the season, it would have been tough for him throughout the end of the campaign. So he'll feel better about life now that he's got that recognition from all his players and coaching staff and people at that wonderful club that he was the best all season long. So he'll try and lead them to glory next season. Now they've had a pretty good season to victory, but obviously Sydney FC will a level above throughout the campaign. I know they've got some catching up to do, but he'll be the one to spearhead that charge yet again.
Certainly will. And just a final one for you, Daniel. John Aloisi signing a new 3-year contract to stay as the coach of Brisbane. He's taken to the last two semi-finals, so that's good news for him.
It's really good news for him and for the Brisbane Roar, because they've been quite uncertain off the field with their ownership structure and things like that for the last couple of years, and that's had an impact. But Johnny to sign on is such a massive boost for that football club. He's a really impressive young manager, John Aloisi, both on the field and off the field. He's exceptional with the media and managing situations like that and dealing with his fans as well. He's such a popular figure, and he's a manager that's becoming really impressive. They finished top three this season. If they can back that up next season, John Aloisi, maybe even win a trophy somewhere along the way, he'll be right in the mix. Don't worry about that. The takeover from Ange Postecoglou as the next Socceroos boss. He's someone who's improving all the way in that regard. It's a competitive field, along with Kevin Muscat, Graham Arnold if he wants it again, and of course Tony Popovich. But John Aloisi, if he has another big season next season, will be right in the mix in that regard. So that's something for Australian football to think about. For the Brisbane Roar, a massive boost that they've secured him for 3 years, because that really stabilises things at a club that has plenty to offer.
And a massive boost for us that we secured you for today, Daniel. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tony. Cheers, guys.
Good on you, mate. Daniel Garb joining us from Fox Sports with his EPL update. That season coming towards a dramatic close.
It is, Shebex. And also some sad news on the Raw front. They lose their talismanic goal machine, Thomas Broish. He's, yeah, he's off after seven seasons, which included two Johnny Warrens and three A-League titles. So what a great player he was, yeah. Thomas Broish.
Certainly was. At 13 minutes to 10, it's always been an interesting look back at the round when Zanners gets his stats out and gives us a glory days on the round in past.
Thanks, Shebex. Yeah, round 8 bagfuls for the Magpies. Gordon Coventry, 11 straight against the Bulldogs in 1926. For the Bombers, it was the great John Coleman, 13-7 against the Cats in 1952. For the Catters, Gary Ablett Sr. bobbed up with 12-1 against the Tigers in 93. and 14-5 against Sydney in 1994, a season in which he kicked 129. For the Hawkers, it was the magnificent Peter Hudson. 13 goals, 2 against South Melbourne in 1970. Jason Dunstall put 10 goals, 2 through the big sticks against the Bears in 94. For the Dees, it was Fred Fanning kicking 10 straight against the Saints in 1947. That season, Fanning kicked 97. For the Tigers, it was Jeff Hogg kicking 10 goals, 1 against the Magpies in 91. Richo having a day out against the Bulldogs in 2004 with 10-3. For the Saints, Alan Davis kicked 10-4 against the Magpies in 1971. Tony Lockett 10-3 against the Bears in 1991. For Sydney, Warwick Kappa, he kicked 10-3 against the Tigers in 1986.
And our leading goal kickers this round so far sees Jeremy Cameron with 6 and Joey Danaher in 2017 for the Bombers with 5. We'll take a break when we come back. Tennis and golf to wrap up the Ultimate Wrap.
On 11.16 SEN, the Ultimate Wrap with Tony Shebeki.
Plenty still to come here on the Ultimate Wrap. Troy Zantuck joining me here in the studio. And on the phone, Mark Sefoulis joins us, our Ultimate Wrap tennis expert. G'day, Mark.
Morning, guys, and morning to all the mothers out there. Happy Mother's Day to you all.
Thank you very much. I'll pass that on to them for you.
Thank you very much.
Eleni Bouchard, Maria Sharapova, Madrid, grud match. How did that end up?
Wow, what an epic battle that was. After all the controversy about the Bouchard calling Maria a cheat and she shouldn't be back on the tour, Bouchard took the match 6-4 in the third set. So it was an epic battle the whole way through, and obviously a few glares across the other end of the net. And, Maria gave it everything and didn't want to lose that match. And Bouchard just had a little bit more extra motivation. And I think the handshake at the end was probably a sight for everyone to watch. It was pretty cold, and there was no feelings between the two of them.
A huge buzz, Mark, about the expected coaching of Novak Djokovic. He could be the great man. Andre.
What a story this is. So Andre Agassi's been tipped to be the next coach of Novak Djokovic. And with last night, Djokovic losing to Nadal, he's been questioned all week about the upcoming coach, of who his coach is going to be. And I think we're going to hear pretty soon that I think it's going to be Andre Agassi, and a superstar of the game. What he'll bring to the camp, I honestly don't know. You know, Djokovic is a champion, so you know you just need someone to guide you. There's no real coach that's needed. It's more guidance of some expertise and maybe some, you know, getting back. Obviously, Agassi came back from a really tough situation in his career and might be able to help Djokovic get back on track from where he's been over the last sort of 12 months.
You mentioned the loss for Djokovic to Nadal. Take us through some of the Madrid results, including Simona Halep.
Yeah, so last night, obviously, I just mentioned Nadal dispatch of Djokovic in the semi-final, which is quite a big result for Rafa, who hasn't beaten Djokovic in the last 7 times. So really good result there for Rafael Nadal to get through to another clay court final. He is the king of clay. Looking like his form going into the French Open is pretty big. So he'll play Dominic Thiem in the final tomorrow. That's in Madrid. And in the women's final, Simona Halep, who has had a really up-and-down kind of a year where struggled early on. She started to find a little bit of form of late. Wins the final, beating Mladenovic, who has had an amazing first start of the year and has lost the last 2 finals. She lost in Stuttgart. And also now losing to Halep in the final here. But, you know, for me, it's really important. Consistency at the top level is important. So, great start to the year for Mladenovic, and well done to Halep on the final.
Also, talk about the possibility of a new World Cup coming up to replace the Davis Cup. Just quickly on that, Mark.
Yeah, it's a really interesting story coming out. A proposal has been put to the ITF regarding a possible Tennis World Cup, which is going to be an interesting thing to replace the Davis Cup, which a lot of players are now starting to boycott due to the time spent being out in the court playing best of 5 sets, and obviously 4 times a year for Davis Cup. So it can be quite consuming for the players. So it has been put to the ITF. It's a space to watch. We will be covering a lot tonight on the first serve. So tune in at 10 p.m. to talk about a lot of these stories in tennis. especially Kokkinakis' comeback this week, which is going to be quite interesting. So Tanasi has had a lot of time out of the game. So we'll be joined by his camp tonight on the first serve at 10 p.m. tonight.
Okay, Mark Sifulis joining Brett Phillips tonight on the first serve. Good on you, buddy. Thanks for your time, Mark. We'll catch you next week.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
We should also mention, too, Brett Phillips coming up with Scotty Lucas next on Inside Footy as finally finishes off his week off. And to finish us off here on the program, Troy Larry Canning, our SEN golf expert for Strixon, dedicated to improving your game. The Players' Championship on at the moment, Larry, and JB Holmes, who sounds like he should be more on a Triple X movie than on a golf course, doing well at the moment at 9-under, equal with Kyle Stanley.
I'm pretty sure his name is John Shebex, and he's changed it to JB.
JB sounds better. It is 5 to 10 on a Sunday morning, too.
The poor little lamb. Look, the guy, he's actually had brain surgery, this bloke, about 7 or 8 years ago. He went off the tour. They found that he was something badly wrong with his head, and they performed brain surgery on him. He's come back, and now he's one of the best players in the world. And clearly, this week, he is leading the Players' Championship, and they call this the fifth major, Shebex, the unofficial fifth major on the tour, because they're Americans and they own the other three of the other four, so they might as well grab another one. But he is 9-under par. He's tied for the lead with Kyle Stanley, another guy who's been out with injury for a long time and back playing great. Louis Oosthuizen is only one stroke back. They're both 9-under par. Louis 8-under par, just one back. And Louis possesses the greatest golf swing I've ever seen in my life. Soo-Woo Kim, the 21-year-old Korean at 7-under par, Emilio Grillo. It's an international field this week, Shebex, because it's, as I said, it's one of the biggest tournaments in the world. I think they're playing for something like $11 or $12 million. So I think money-wise, it is the biggest event on the planet. As I said, the fifth major, and a golf course they play every year. It's always the same course, the TPC Sawgrass, with that horrible island green, the 17th green. I don't know whether you watched any of it on TV, but...
I used to play Sawgrass on my computer golf game all the time. Loved it.
As close as you'd ever want to play that 17th, I think, on the computer, because that is the scariest par 3 I've ever seen in my life. And I was just looking at some highlights, well, probably lowlights, but this poor guy's case. Ben Crane was playing the hole yesterday, hit his first ball into the water, went to the drop zone, hit a beautiful pitch shot from the drop zone to about 70-odd metres, the drop zone. Hit the flag and went back into the water again. Had to get another pitch shot. He took 7. There you go. You aim at the flag, you hit it, and is there a worse game in the world than golf when it comes to hitting the perfect shot? I don't think there is.
Absolutely, brace your heart. Just very quickly, Larry, Adam Scott is currently at 3-under, Jason Day at 1-under. One would think they're probably out of contention now.
No, Adam Scott's definitely in contention.
Okay, good.
That's only 6 back, and you've got two guys at the top of the leaders board who really are inexperienced at this sort of level, so they could well back off. Adam Scott's definitely, he needs to play the front nine about 3 or 4 under tomorrow to get back into the thick of it, and definitely a chance. And he's won this event. This is his first big win way back, I think 12 years ago was his first win on the US Tour. So he loves the course, and he's obviously in great form.
Appreciate your time, Larry. We'll do it again shortly.
Thanks, guys.
Larry Canning joining us there, our ultimate rap golf expert for Strixon, dedicated to improving your game.
And great to see John Daly celebrating once again.
In Hooters, the car park? What did he do? No, that's what he does.
He recently had a win.
Oh, did
Shebex,
he?
Shebex,
He sells all his gear in the car park at Hooters.
Does he?
Yeah.
At Hooters?
Yeah, you thought I was being unserious. No, he does. Yeah. He has an agreement with
too
Hooters.
Too much information there, Shebex.
Too
much, far too much.
Merchandise, that's
Sunday
what he
morning,
does.
10 o'clock.
Catch you in 2 weeks.
I will.
Yes.
Enjoyed the day, I've got
Thank
to say.
Try.
And again, a happy Mother's Day
Good
to
on
all
you,
the mums.
Stick around, folks, because Brett Phillips and Scotty Lucas coming up with Inside Footy. Then two games from Melbourne. My God, that's something different for SEN. Coming up today here, live footy from 12 o'clock. We'll catch you again next Sunday morning.